This is the Lombardi Line with Mike Palm and Mike Pritchard. Now here's your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a better. Welcome inside here to the VSiN studios at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line. Femi Abebefe alongside Mike Palm, the VP of Operations here at the Circa Resort and Casino. Our pal Mike Pritchard, VSiN NFL analyst, will not be with us here on this show. He's celebrating his birthday, so we wish Pritchard a happy birthday.
Congratulations to making it to 54 for Mike, and I know he's enjoying it in some nice weather in a place a little far away from here. But
although the weather's nice here too,
we feel it's beautiful right now.
It really is.
Nevada Day. We're celebrating Nevada Day, but happy birthday, Mike. But we feel very naked without you. This is no longer a Friday football panel with only two.
It does feel weird how much space. I'm like, I'm used to going triple option, three wide here, but hey, we'll make do and try to have fun over these next 2 hours. We do have a couple of guests who will be joining us later on in 45 minutes. Adam Burke, VSiN managing editor, does a lot of great work for VSiN.com. He will join us to break down his college football plays. Also, do a little World Series with Adam as well. He wrote up on the World Series over at VSiN.com. That article just pushed out about an hour ago over on Twitter. He has a game one play. We'll get into it. Also get his serious thoughts as well between the Diamondbacks and the Rangers. Then at 11:30 West Coast time, 2:30 Eastern, I should say. Randy Mueller, former NFL general manager. He was an executive of the year in the National Football League, also now at The Athletic, and has the Football GM podcast, will join us. We'll talk a little trade deadline stuff, which teams he wants to see make moves, which players could be on the move, and also some of his thoughts on the marquee matchups here in week number 8. But let's start with Thursday Night Football last night. We saw the Buffalo Bills defeat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 24-18. Buffalo fails to cover despite ample opportunity to cover the 10-point spread. The game goes under the total. Surprise, surprise, a primetime under once again in the NFL. What were your thoughts with Buffalo getting back on the right track and winning last night?
Yeah, they got the win. And from a betting perspective, though, if you had the Bills minus 8, 8.5, 9, even 10, you had it felt you had the right side in this game. I mean, they fourth and one in the first quarter from the goal line, and they're in the shotgun with... What are you doing? You've got Josh Allen. You can't get him to run. I mean, maybe he doesn't bench as much as Hurts, but come on. He's got to be the second most likely candidate to be able to get a yard on a sneak and an incomplete pass. So you leave points on the board there. And then you're up 14 for a large portion of the game. And in the fourth quarter, you punt fourth and short from plus yardage twice. And then, you know, Tampa gets... You know, some fortuitous calls. I'm not saying they were bad calls, but you get bailed out on a couple fourth downs and you score. And all of a sudden you're defending a Hail Mary to win the game when you probably should have never been in that spot. I mean, you're at home in short yard. That's the one thing about Buffalo. And I think it's been true for this window they've had of 3 or 4 years. It's hard in the playoffs when you get a team that you can't count on third and two or fourth and one.
Yeah. And that's been the knock.
It is, and they still are. They're still that way. You see it not at the goal line and then twice punting in those spots where 95% of NFL teams are going for it, even the most conservative head coaches. So it's good because I think for the great body of the game, they played awfully well, and they were the superior team. Tampa Bay is just, they're challenged offensively, and I don't think we saw anything we didn't expect last night.
Yeah, no, Tampa Bay, it feels, I don't want to say that the wheels are coming off, but it feels like it's sort of come back to earth after the 3-1 start. They've now lost 3 straight games and a couple injuries as well. They're getting banged up. So you would like to see them improve a little bit. I mean, the division is still out there for the taking. I know that Atlanta's right now sitting at 4-3, but they're not anything to really write home about, and it can easily lose a couple games to put Tampa right back into it and put New Orleans right back into that division.
The thing about it, Atlanta, the schedule is really favorable for them, though. Yeah. You know, and they can get by with Ridder, even, you know, going to Tampa Bay last week. They have another winnable spot against Tennessee. So if you got Atlanta, you know, at some time during the year, it's somewhere around $2, I think you have a really good ticket.
Yeah, 2-1 definitely is a good ticket. Yeah. I don't know if I would bet it right now here. But to your point, though, when you look at the box score from last night, Buffalo outgained them 427 to 302 yards per play. The Bills 6.3, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 4.9. But you mentioned the punts, though, and I had our producer Elliot Bowman put this into the rundown. The last 4 drives for the Buffalo Bills, they punted from their own 49, they punted from Tampa's 47, they punted from Tampa's 49, and then they punted from Tampa's 48. No other NFL team in the last 30 years has gotten within a yard of midfield on each of their last 4 drives of a game and punted on all 4. it's a pretty bad beat, I feel like. Not like a massively bad beat, but a sneaky bad beat if you bet the Bills in this game.
It was. I mean, it just really was. There's every indicator of the game outside of the last 5 minutes of the game says you should have been covering this by 20 and not ahead of sweat. You would have had to have two scores to beat you. But, you know, they let them hang around and hang around and hang around from a spread perspective. And so it's a tough beat. But if you teased it, as a lot of people did leading into the weekend, you were able to get there.
It was a nice teaser leg for me. I got a couple teasers that are still open. We'll see if we can get home with those on Sunday to get ahead and cash a nice size weekend. But what do you make of this? Because our colleague, Kelly Bidlin, who you see on a numbers game, also see him out throughout the weekend on the live bet shows, he tweeted the NFL ATS trend. So these are against the spread trends. And I thought that this was interesting. Not that there was anything in terms of that you could bet, but I think it's just interesting to kind of take inventory of where we sit now that we're into week 8. And this is the stats. Away teams so far this season, 50.5% against the spread. Home teams then 49.5% against the spread. Favorites 50.5%. Dogs 49.5%. Away favorites, if they're 51.2% against the spread. Away dogs 50% against the spread. Home favorites 50%, and then home dogs 48.8%. It feels like we're all just flipping coins this NFL season. I don't know if we just don't know who's good, we don't know who's bad. The only trend that so far has some sort of like inclination of like, oh, we see where this is going, is the under. The under has cashed quite a bit because we know scoring has been down. That's sort of been the conversation of the last few weeks.
I think that conversation might be had with the owners and the executives, and now we're seeing a lot more illegal contact penalties last week and then last night as well. So that's an interesting trend if you're playing totals, because those automatic first down penalties are very, very important. Just like offensive holding is the most detrimental penalty to the over, these illegal I know pass interference at 60 yards is, but these insidious little 5 yard penalties that get you first downs on third and long or second and long make a huge difference in the total of the game.
The unders are 65-41 so far this season. Like, you would expect that to correct itself at some point. Like you said, maybe the league will have the meetings among themselves saying like, hey, like we got to get scoring back up because that's what the lifeblood of our league is. And that's what everybody gets excited about. And they don't want the conversation to be about how the play has been pretty poor offensively. And I was actually thinking last night, because when we saw Buffalo go ahead and line up in that third and goal and even fourth and goal, both downs in shotgun from the 1 yard line, I said, you know what would actually fix offensive football is if we just banned the shotgun formation. honestly, if we just said, hey, shotgun is on a 4 month hiatus, it'll come back in 2024, but every play must be run under center. Because I feel like the defenses, when they see shotgun, they're like, all right, well, let's sit back in too high, let's limit the big play. And now you're forcing these offenses to go ahead and go 11 plays, 75 yards, where it's hard to do that without getting that backbreaking holding penalty.
Well, you'd have to reteach a whole generation of kids how to take the snap under center. It's like base running. It seems like they don't teach it in baseball anymore either. It's so horrific.
get the shotgun and Michael Lombardi, he's talked about it, who this show is obviously named after. Like, he's talked about how shotgun is just, teams are hanging out in it way too much and the defenses have adjusted. So now we got to zig when they zag and go back under center, because I think that's where a lot of the big plays, I mean, you look at the big play offenses, Miami's under center more than most teams. The Niners are under center more than most teams. And those are the offenses that are making big plays consistently, at least. So we'll see what happens there. But let's get to some of the other news and notes, though, from around the National Football League here. And we saw one in the Meadowlands to where Daniel Jones has been ruled out for this game against the New York Jets. This will now be his third straight missed game. Tyrod Taylor will get the start. And I think the bigger news with this is that head coach Brian Daboll declined to confirm if Jones will be back this season. Like, this is the first time he's ever talked about how there's uncertainty if Jones will come back. He's dealing with the neck injury that he banged up in their loss to the Miami Dolphins. But if this is Tyrod the rest of the way, is there much of a drop-off here for the Giants?
No, I think they're better. I'm just telling you from the sample size we've seen so far, they should have won the game in Buffalo on Sunday night. And, you know, I know Daboll screams at Taylor because he audibles too. But as Michael said yesterday on the show, he gave him two plays. Why give him two plays and let him go to the run? Why even give him the play? You're running this play. And then, they beat a decent Commanders team. I think the Commanders are an okay team. They have, a lot of talent, obviously, on the defensive side of the ball. Howell's been all right, too. Just haven't been able to protect him. But they win as a home dog there. This is, I keep looking at this game saying, geez, I think I want to take the whole field goal here in this spot.
I mean, it's interesting. It's Zach Wilson having to win by margin, which is like, I keep telling myself, I don't know if I can get behind that.
And he took the bye week and went to Utah. I mean, what is he thinking? was all that about? They're so angry.
That's New York radio in a nutshell. I was like, it's the guy's bye week. can he not go back home? I don't know what's going on. I'm sure he still has the playbook. I mean, these things are digital these days. Like, you can still go over tape and all that stuff while he's in Utah. But I mean, hey, maybe we should downgrade the Jets into this game since Zach Wilson took a little bit of time off and took his girlfriend out to Utah. But I'm with you. I still think that there's a slight downgrade from Daniel Jones to Tyrod, but I don't think it's massive to where like it would move you off of the key number of three or anything like that. Like, I think three is a pretty fair number in this game. What do you think of the total? I mean, if you have Tyrod Taylor against that Jets defense, it's a little scary.
It's right. I mean, that's what it should be. When you get totals under 38 in the NFL, those are low totals.
Yeah.
And that's a low total in this game. But I mean, obviously the Jets want to run the ball as well. Even though they have Saquon, they're not really explosive, right? These are two teams that you're going to put drives together unless you have, sudden change and defensive scores or special team scores. So, I mean, I couldn't play it over at 36.5. I think that's about right. This is a game that probably, you're looking at a 12 possession game.
Which of these teams, Jets or the Giants? Because this is actually a sneaky big game. Which of these teams do you think has the best chance to make the playoffs?
Oh, the Jets. I think the Jets do because of their defense will keep them in a lot of games. And I think Breece Hall is a really talented kid. I mean, he's going to be offensive rookie of the year until he got hurt last year. And, he's shown flashes of that. That's why I didn't understand. They only got him 4 carries against Dallas in that game.
Didn't make a whole lot of sense. And he was upset about it, too. He made it known there in that loss there. If the Jets make the playoffs, can you imagine that without Aaron Rodgers? And the narrative that will be surrounding Robert Saleh, who's done a pretty good job so far this season. We'll get to the big game in the Bay Area on the other side with just warming up here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with Mike Palm and Mike Pritchard. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Become a VSIN Pro subscriber today and get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You'll also get unlimited access to our VSIN.com/picks page, sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. Check the top VSIN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI and see which VSIN expert has the hot hand. For VSIN Pro picks, betting splits, betting guides, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSIN Pro subscriber today. Sign up now and get access to everything we do through May 1st for only $120 at VSIN.com/subscribe. It's a great deal if I've ever heard one. This is the Lombardi Line. Femi Abebefe alongside Mike Palm hanging out here on a Football Friday, going over some of the news and notes from around the National Football League. And let's go to the Bay Area, where the big game this week, the marquee afternoon game, is between the Cincinnati Bengals and San Francisco 49ers. Right now, the Niners 4-point favorites, and the total is sitting at 43.5. Bengals coming off of the bye, Niners coming off back-to-back losses, which, 2 weeks ago, this was the best team head and shoulders above the rest, and now they're 5-2, and a little bit of uncertainty about who's going to be playing quarterback, because Brock Purdy earlier this week was put into the concussion protocol, which would mean that Sam Darnold would be in line to start. But now it feels like Purdy might have a chance to clear protocol and come back in time for Sunday afternoon's game here. But from a betting standpoint, like, do you just sort of wait for the official news, or do you try to get ahead of something here?
Well, this is interesting because, this was 6 and it moved 2.5 points with Purdy in concussion protocol. The difference from Purdy to Darnold, although now we hear the praise of Darnold and how great he's looked and all the...
Hey, they love him in there.
Here's my problem with trying to anticipate this news. I thought 6 was the wrong number to begin with, right? I think it was too many.
Okay.
Against Cincinnati. So now I'm trying to beat the news. Do I want to lay 4? Because I thought 6 was a Cincinnati side anyhow. So I think I'm in a no-win spot here in this game. Unless I know it's Darnold and I can get 4, that's probably what the play is going to be. But I don't know right now.
So if it were, like, let's say that the concussion protocol news never came out or whatever, mm-hmm. and at 6, like, you thought the Bengals were a good bet. Like, do you think that this number right now is, like, the accurate number when Purdy is healthy, or do you
think that's about what it should be, 4.5, maybe 5. I made the game 4.5. You could talk yourself reasonably into saying that 6 is 5. I'll say it this way. 5 is the better number. The kid from Michigan misses the field goal. They would have won that game, yep. right? And then Wilkes with this blitz. I mean, come on. with 16 seconds left. And now he, first of all, Shanahan trashes him, and now 2 days later he comes out, oh, it was my fault. I said to Michael yesterday, why isn't the head coach have the headset on? And he'd say, time out. No, we're not going zero here.
Because he's too busy doing this, looking at his offensive plays.
That's what he said. He's too busy trying to figure out what the first drive of the second half is going to be.
Yep.
I said, well, this is an era where nobody does it. He goes, you know, Belichick used to, you know, he's telling it, you know, mix in a run. He's you know, not what to do, but he's telling him how he wants the pace of the game to be. But they're too focused on their one side of the ball that's their specialty. Anyhow, I think Cincinnati's really on the rise up here as Burrow gets back to health. I really do. I think that team is an underrated defensive team. I think, you know, everybody in the world was on them against Seattle, and they got there. Seattle had their chances, yeah, but I mean,
that's the luck box of the year.
But I still think that this Bengals team is going to be competitive, and I don't want to lay more than a field goal against them. I don't care if it is in Northern California. So we'll see. When we know who the quarterback, if we know it's Darnold and it's four, I'm going to take four. I just will. That being said, I don't know if I'll get enough clarity. It's certainly not one of the spots that I'm going to make a stand on this week. But I really thought of Cincinnati at six, and I didn't know that I'd have to make a move on the game, because I actually thought, well, maybe they're going to bet San Francisco here, coming off two losses coming home, and I can get 6.5 or seven. And then, of course, the Purdy news comes out, and that whole thought was gone.
I want to believe in the Bengals just because, like, I like Joe Burrow, I like Ja'Marr Chase, and I think they're a fun team to be among the contenders in the AFC. But I feel like this is a little bit of blind faith here. Like, I guess I haven't seen anything this season to where, like, hey, I want to go ahead and back this team against what is probably power rated as the second best team in the league, maybe the third best team in the league in San Francisco. Like, Burrow, he's healthier, which is nice. It's good to see. But even before the bye week, I thought they were thoroughly outplayed by Seattle. And Seattle made the mistakes in the red zone, 1-for-5 in the red zone. If not for that, Seattle wins that game, maybe by a possession plus. Like, I want to see it first before I can go ahead and back into the Bengals, which, I mean, I get, like, yeah, to see it first, maybe you lose out on a little bit of value because maybe this could be the ultimate value spot of getting the points with Joe Burrow with a better quarterback. But I don't know, man. Like, I can't get there with Cincinnati.
This is what they do, though, Femi, this team. It muddles around through the first few months, and then they put it together. They're always the best team in the AFC in November and December. Yeah. And look, they went to a Super Bowl and lost two AFC championship games by one possession on the road. I mean, when you talk about Kansas City's the best team in the last 5 years, they're a very close second, you know, and I don't think people give them enough credit for that. I mean, they went to Buffalo and physically beat that team up last year in a playoff game. So I still think that defensively they're pretty well coached. So I don't know where we'll end up on this. I'm not going to use it as a contest play with the Friday night contest with Matt Newman's, but I may end up having a play on it sometime late Saturday night or Sunday morning.
A little money line action too?
No, not that far.
All right, just checking. Just wanted to see. Let's go to South Beach, though, because this is an interesting game from an injury report standpoint. Like 24 hours ago, 48 hours ago, we thought that maybe Tyreek Hill was going to miss this game dealing with a hip injury. He was not at the Wednesday practice. We get the Tua soundbite when he's asked by the media. He says, when we get him back down the road. like when you hear that, it's like, whoa, it's like, is he going to go short-term IR? Like, what's going on here? And then down the road meant Thursday afternoon, because Tyreek Hill was back at practice yesterday. The line has now gone back up to the Dolphins 9.5-point favorites. Total is 47. Also, there might be some better news for the Miami Dolphins, to where Jalen Ramsey, who we have yet to see make his debut with the Dolphins, got injured in training camp with a knee injury. Sounds like he might be able to come back. Adam Schefter reported that Ramsey was coming back. Ramsey has since debunked those reports, saying, this is news to me. I didn't know where you got your source from. I don't think he said that he's for sure not going to play, but at least it kind of put a little bit of cold water on the Schefter reports and the Jalen Ramsey was back. But it sounds like Ramsey, though, ahead of schedule with his rehab to the knee injury. Is this a nice bounce back spot for Miami? And maybe we can fade New England off of a big time upset victory last week.
Well, that's the thing about the NFL. We talk about all these situations are all 50%. I think if you fade the team off an upset win every week, the next week you'd be more than 50%. Anecdotally, I don't know. I would have to look at the numbers. Yeah. And have somebody run it. But that seems to be a thing that kept teams that are these mediocre teams can't put two good, real good performances together in a row. But they played this game already. Remember, this is the rematch. Mm-hmm. And the New England defense did a pretty good job against Miami in containing them. I think 9.5 is a little high in this spot. I'd take a pass on this game. I think a lot of this you know, if there's a lot of numbers where you can use six in the teasers to get the games below. This game forces you to use a seven. I think that's why that game's going to sit there. So it's not linked up with some other games. But for me, I can't get that far on 9.5.
Well, the look ahead was 12 before New England went ahead and beat Buffalo.
And Miami lost game on Sunday night in Philadelphia.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, personally, as someone who was on the Patriots last week against Buffalo, yeah, I think this is Miami or pass. Like, I just, like you said, I wouldn't want to go ahead and back New England off the big performance a week ago where everyone's like, oh, maybe the Patriots have found something and all that stuff. I think that it would be Miami or pass for me. I don't think I'm going to bet it, but let's see the injury report. I want to see the Friday, which is tricky with the New England game because, I mean, everybody's questionable. They have about 25 guys who are questionable that we don't really find out until the inactives list comes out 90 minutes prior to kickoff as to who's actually going to be playing in the game. But I think for if Tua has his guys, like sounds like Tyreek is good to go, maybe we get a Jalen Ramsey bump. But even if Ramsey doesn't come back, they played the whole season without him. I don't think that's really much in terms of moving the point spread or not. But if the offensive line, which I think that's the big thing for Miami, a number of offensive line injuries that we saw against the Philadelphia Eagles, if they can get that corrected, I think that maybe this is a Miami spot to go ahead and bounce back against an inferior opponent in the New England Patriots. Speaking of inferior, Deshaun Watson was atrocious last week against the Indianapolis Colts. The Browns somehow still find a way to win the game there with the Myles Garrett sack fumbles that kind of swung things. Watson is out. P.J. Walker is in. And P.J. Walker in the Pacific Northwest is getting 3.5 points. There's even a 4 out there in the market. Total sitting at 38 here. I mean, based on what we saw from Watson last Sunday, this is probably a wash in terms of a downgrade or anything like that. Because I don't think Watson's healthy. It doesn't sound like he's right with that shoulder.
He just looked good one game all year, week three. That's it.
Tennessee.
That was it. I like the under here. I played under 38. I think this is going to be a low-scoring game. I still respect that Cleveland defense a lot. I know the Colts did move the ball on them last week. You know, Seattle's not going to take as many chances as Minshew. Minshew's so feast or famine with the way they play that game. I think this will be a more conservative game. Obviously, Cleveland with Walker wants to keep this game in the teens as well. So that's their formula to win without Deshaun or without a healthy Deshaun. So I played under 38. At three, I'm tempted to lean Seahawks at 3.5. It's a pass.
To me, it feels it's a little tempting to take the points with a good defense like that, but it's also P.J. Walker on the road in a pretty hostile environment where it's like, I don't know. And they're going to be wearing the royal blue uniforms from the Jim Zorn days and the Steve Largent days and all that stuff. So there's going to be some extra juice in the building there up north in Seattle. So I think it's a pass for me right now as well. On the other side, we will get to the marquee games in college football, which also means we're going to discuss a little bit of Heisman here because that's what we love to do on the Lombardi Line on a Friday. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with Mike Palm and Mike Pritchard. Now here is your host, Timmy Abbefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
College basketball is about to tip off, and now is the time to get your copy of our annual betting guide. This year's guide includes Matt Heumann's top 25 rankings, who could be this season's Florida Atlantic, all 32 conference previewed, Wooden Award candidates, that piques my interest, futures, and season-long prop bets. The only way to get the guide is to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Sign up now for just $120 and get VSiN Pro access to everything we do, including, or all the way through May 1st. That's all college basketball season long, March Madness and beyond for only $120. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. College hoops. Be here before you know it. I believe it's like, what, 10 days away? 9 days away?
Is it really? Hoops? Oh, God. It's too much.
Can anybody beat out Zach Edey for the Wooden Award?
Probably not.
Yeah, that's it. I honestly, weird aside here before we get to the college football stuff. I spent, it was about 3 weeks ago, I spent probably 3 hours doing some work on the Wooden Award, thinking, all right, like, what are the historical trends? What typically happens? Like, how do past winners, how did they play in their previous season and stuff like that? Just trying to go in over like what would actually stand out and who stood out. And I had like a list of a bunch of candidates who had like, okay, maybe that's a guy to bet on, maybe that's a guy to bet on. And then I just did a little bit more work on Zach Edey. I'm like, okay, well, I did all of that work. Let me figure out if this guy could be beatable. And I kind of just did a little bit of research and found out that a lot of people think that Zach Edey can go ahead and finish as the Wooden Award winner once again here this season. Purdue's supposed to be better than they were last year. They were a one seed last year. They're going to be a really good team. He's going to put up big numbers once again. I'm not sure if anyone can beat him, especially with Purdue, their whole season arc being the whole redemption story. So who knows? Might be tough to beat him out there.
It's going
to
be the Virginia story, lose to 16 and come back and win it.
The trend will tell you that's what's going to happen. That's what will happen. Every one seed who's lost to a 16, the next year they win the national title. Every single one of them. So make sure you take that to the bank or not. Please don't. But we'll have Adam Berg joining us in 15 minutes. He'll break down his college football card and also game one of the World Series tonight. It is Nathan Eovaldi versus Zach Gallen, Diamondbacks Rangers over there in the Lone Star State. But let's talk some college football. You were hot on this game here, Mike Palm. Oklahoma, Kansas. I already see you right now smirking there. The Sooners, 9.5-point favorites, total 66. Big noon kickoff is in Lawrence. Is this a game that you think Oklahoma can win by margin, or is Kansas, with Jason being a quarterback, can they be competitive?
I don't know. This Oklahoma, they're not consistent enough offensively. And this is a good Dylan Gabriel Heisman talk. I mean, come on. Get away from me already.
Red River was magical for him.
Get away from me. I mean, they UCF, they punt. I mean, come on. That was awful. They started the first four drives in positive territory. So but the reality is they're going to be in the Big 12 championship game, probably against Texas, and I know everybody will say Texas is going to beat them this time if yours is healthy. I think they have to bounce back off. I think it was a disappointing, ugly home performance for them. They go to Kansas, where they should be able to put up some points. You see the total here is 66. I'm not interested in laying more than a touchdown. I'll pass on this game. I'm one of the rare weeks I won't be watching the big noon Eastern Big 9 Pacific game.
The Big 9 Pacific. Yeah. It's honestly the Big 12:35 game, because I don't think they start until 12:35, the way that thing goes.
They got that 4 hours, so they can do 25 minutes of it's like an MLS game. The MLS is the only one that doesn't start on time. Every other soccer is right on the second. Yep. MLS 9 after, 12 after.
It's an American tradition. Yeah. Start after the time that it's actually supposed to start. But let's go to Salt Lake City, where College Game Day is hanging out in the beautiful Rice-Eccles Stadium. Oregon taking on Utah. This is a top 15 matchup, though. Number 8 Oregon, number 13 Utah. The Ducks right now 6.5-point favorites, total 47 here, as we're kind of hovering around that key number. It hit 7 earlier in the week. Some buyback on the Utes here, but is this another spot for my man Bodacious to add to his Heisman campaign?
Well, this is a spot for him to win the Heisman, go into Rice-Eccles against a really good defense and win the game convincingly and put up big numbers here. I think he has to do something to overcome McCarthy. They're not going to lose. Well, they're just not going to lose unless they give him the death penalty midseason or whatever, but not the internet crimes. They're a really good team, Michigan. So
they are.
All of a sudden, out of nowhere, now McCarthy becomes the default because Penix can't score a touchdown and he keeps laying these eggs, which should have been to your spot. I mean, the point you made about in live after two first downs on that drive to win the game in Husky Stadium, he's going to be the favorite. He's going to be the favorite. And now all he has to do is not have a bad spot and then get tripped up. And now suddenly you now have to overcome McCarthy, who's the favorite. It's really strange, the volatility of this market. I still think there's value even to bet him today. Did you get him at, what was your price?
30-1 on.
Yeah, I mean, I think
he's 20 right now.
I still think there's value at 20-1 because he's got the opportunity here. This is the game of the week. Clearly, the game of the week is great for him that Utah won at USC and puts all this attention. So I think the bet in this game is actually, if you can find him, if you can, here 13-1.
So DraftKings has Bo Nix at 13.
You can find 20. I think that's the play leading into this game, actually.
No, 100%. I know I've gotten Adam Burke. He's on board. Yeah. Tim Murray's on board as well. This is the Bodacious campaign is growing here at VSiN, which is nice to see. Hopefully that we can all cash the tickets. But I agree with you. Like, not only does Bo Nix have this opportunity against Utah, they still have USC coming to Autzen Stadium, which I mean, like, USC's down. They have a couple losses, but still, it's SC. It's Caleb Williams. That'll be a prime time kind of time slot there. They have Oregon State at home, which nationally it's not the biggest game, the Oregon State rivalry, but it's going to be on Black Friday, where there's not a whole lot of college football, so that will be a premium game that weekend there. And then there's a potential for the rematch against Washington in the Pac-12 title game, with based on how that game played out a couple weeks ago, everyone's going to want to see that rematch. So an opportunity is there for Bo Nix to maybe get into the Heisman conversation. He's already in the conversation, to maybe get to where he can maybe become one of the favorites to win the Heisman Trophy.
What do you think about Oregon to make the playoff?
I like it.
Do you? Do you have that ticket?
I don't have that ticket. I'm just going to ride this Bo Nix thing out here. But I mean, I probably should have bet both them and Bo Nix when they.
Is there a way they get shut out if they run the table now and beat Washington? Florida State.
Yep.
Is going to get in undefeated if that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia.
If they.
I can't. The SEC can't get two.
No.
Right.
Not so this year.
Let's just say Georgia, Michigan. There's a fourth spot. Right. Is an I guess an undefeated Oklahoma who would have beaten Texas twice would get in before him. So they need a little help.
And you're also thinking, I mean, Michigan, Ohio State, there's a chance both of them get in just like last year.
Oh, stop.
I mean, just
like Ohio State. I mean,
am I crazy? It's like if Michigan, Ohio State is a close game in Ann Arbor and Michigan wins and everyone says, well, Ohio State, they played the best team in the country to a possession. You don't think that conversation is going to start?
I get it, but they can't. I don't think that they can. They cannot play in a conference title game and get in when there's teams that there's these revenge things. Texas is going to make an argument if they come back and win it, the revenge, and you win a conference championship. So it's interesting. I think Oregon will run the table.
I think
so too. But the bet means you're going to need a little bit of help somewhere too.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think the Oregon Ducks are a really interesting team. I think they're a little bit underrated, honestly. Well, nobody's talking about them nationally. I'm like, this is a really good football team.
I have them power rated over Ohio State. And I get it. Ohio State has the two big wins at Notre Dame and then Penn State. But I mean, Penn State almost. I mean, James Franklin would not throw the ball from his own side of the field. It was awful.
Yeah, he's bad.
I ended up playing the under and I took the points there, so I split the game out. But I mean, it was just awful. He would not take any chances at all. If they don't call back that fumble interception run back, whatever they had there towards the end of the first half, it's a whole different game. But I mean, once they got down and his inability to try to push the ball down the field, it sort of was, I thought, less of a default win for Ohio State or Marvin Harrison Jr. suddenly vaults into, you know, the top five in the Heisman race as well.
Top two, according to the recent Athletic straw poll. It's funny because, like, the straw poll, Michael Penix is still number one. He lost some first place votes after a couple weeks ago, getting all 34 first place votes. Yeah. But Marvin Harrison Jr., he came from like ninth or so, and got 9 first place votes, is now number two in the Heisman poll. And what's interesting, though, is that because J.J. McCarthy is a guy that is the favorite of the betting market, he finished fifth in the Athletic Heisman straw poll. And I don't think that's like predictive of where he might finish. I think the betting market's more so projecting with Michigan getting marquee matchups against Penn State and Ohio State down the line. But up until this point, like, the cart is being put before the horse in the betting market, at least, because he has not put together the type of season that would be, hey, Heisman favorite material, but he has the chance to do that later on this year.
He got the national stage last week where he was the only receiver for him, too. I mean, so that all worked out in his favor, although he was great. But this Oregon is a very good team. It's an underrated defensive team. They can run the football. I mean, Dan Lanning, if they end up with that one loss and not making the playoffs, the blood's on his hands for all those decisions at Husky Stadium.
Send him a Venmo request to refund my Heisman bet. So I'm going to do it if that's the case here. The Heisman poll, what is as follows? It was, so Penix was number one. Marvin Harrison was two. Jaden Daniels was three. Dylan Gabriel, four. J.J. McCarthy, five. Bo Nix at number six.
Jaden Daniels gets to have 20 possessions a game because his defense lets the other team score immediately as well.
It's nice for the numbers.
He just puts up all these numbers.
If they beat Alabama and Tuscaloosa, I think he actually would become the Heisman favorite in the betting market, at least. I don't know if that's what would happen and he would win it. I think they still probably have to run the table and maybe even have to beat Georgia to win it. But I think if they beat Alabama in the betting market, you will see a new favorite in the Heisman, because his numbers up until this point, he should be the Heisman favorite. Like, he's unbelievable. 3,000 all-purpose yards, 30 all-purpose touchdowns, and only 3 interceptions. All right, Adam Burke will join us on the other side. We'll talk college football some more and a little bit of Game 1 World Series. The Fall Classic is tonight, and we're breaking it down next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with Mike Palm and Mike Pritchard. Now here is your host, Timmy Abbefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Don't forget, on DraftKings Sportsbook this week, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Download the app and use the promo code VEGAS when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Lion hanging out at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. Femi Abebefe alongside Mike Palm here on a Football Friday. And to continue the football discussion and also squeezing in a little bit of fall classic talk, we're bringing in our guy, Adam Burke, VSiN managing editor, also co-host of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast and also the baseball podcast as well here at the Sports Betting Network. The man that does a lot of stuff for VSiN.com as well. Adam, we appreciate you joining us here this morning. Let's talk college football and your beloved Ohio State Buckeyes, who are 14.5 point favorites on the road in Madison. How do you see this one playing out here between the Buckeyes and the Badgers?
Yeah, good to be on with you guys here. A lot going on, in my world. So thanks for listing all the things that I'm doing here. I appreciate that. As far as Ohio State and Wisconsin goes, I mean, I think this game would have been a lot more interesting if Tanner Mordecai was able to play for Wisconsin. With broken hand, he's out for the year. And honestly, he didn't seem to fit all that well into Phil Longo's offense anyway. Wisconsin was not that explosive of a team with him. And they're certainly not going to be an explosive team without him. Braylon Locke, two games in place of Mordecai, 36 of 71, 362 yards. I just don't see Wisconsin scoring a whole lot of points against Ohio State. It's all Braylon Allen right now because Ches Malusi, the backup running back, was hurt earlier on in the year. So he's just going to have to be a workhorse in this game. And I think against a physical Ohio State front, I don't see Wisconsin getting chunk plays. I don't see them moving the ball. I don't see a letdown from Ohio State here. I like the Buckeyes laying 14.5. The question is if the offense is going to be good enough, but Kyle McCord seems to have finally realized I'm going to throw the ball to Marvin Harrison a lot, and that's going to help us. So I think the Buckeyes win and cover this game. And I think under 14.5 team total for Wisconsin, which I've seen some other people, including our own Tyler Shoemaker, like, I agree with that play as well.
That's the way I played it, the team total, because I just worry about a little bit about the letdown spot here. And you know, it's strange in Madison at night. Yeah. Camp Randall is a tough spot. And Ohio State's gone there as number one in the country several times before and lost. We saw Houston last week give Texas everything they wanted and more. Adam, they go to the Little Apple where I think Stormy's going to be tomorrow.
Is she?
Covering that game, catching 17.5. Are you backing the Fighting Holgersons?
I am back in the Fighting Holgersons. And yes, Stormy will be there in Manhattan, of course, has to drive to Kansas City to fly out because there's like six flights a day into the Manhattan airport in and out. But I like Houston in this game. I think 17.5 is just too much. Donovan Smith's played really, really well in this Holgerson offense. And honestly, last week, they probably should have beaten Texas. I know Quinn Ewers got hurt in that game, but Houston got a bad third down spot on their final possession. The fourth down play was a mess. So if they had gotten a better spot, because I think he had the first down, they probably score. They likely go for two. With the way that Texas's defense was playing, they very well might have gotten it. So I just think 17.5 is too much here. I like Kansas State. I think they're a solid football team, but Houston's got that offense rolling. Holgerson's kind of got that gambler mentality sometimes. So I think an early kickoff, 11 a.m. local time in Manhattan, going to be kind of sleepy for the home team. I like Houston here getting a three-score head start.
Yeah, that was a brutal spot there on that third and one. I remember watching that game, had nothing invested. I was like, man, that's rough for the Houston backers there. We're hanging out here with Adam Burke, VSiN managing editor, also the co-host of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast, and also the VSiN Daily Baseball Bets Podcast as well. Check out all his work over at VSiN.com. Let's get one more college football play before we transition over to the Fall Classic here, and that's Air Force and Colorado State. Not the sexiest game on paper. Right now, the Falcons, 14-point favorites, total 46.5. What do you like?
Yeah, this probably won't be a sexy game at all, but Air Force is a top 20 team, and they're going on the road here to Fort Collins. And the big thing to me here in this game, Femi, is weather. And, you know, we're getting to that time of the year where you're going to start getting snow in some of the higher elevations. You're going to start getting more rain across the country, more wind as well, as we've seen over the last few weeks. But this is a game where you're expected to get a good amount of snowfall during the game. The forecast I saw yesterday said there could be about 1.5 inches of snow during the game, not to mention a little bit of wind. It's going to be very cold. And as we know, Colorado State with Jay Norvell, they want to throw the football. And Braden Faller Nicolosi, the quarterback for them, I think he's a very promising guy going forward. But three-star kid out of Texas, didn't start last year, hasn't played in this kind of really ugly winter-esque environment. So I think Colorado State's going to struggle to score points here in a game where they're going to have limited possessions anyway. And Colorado State's run defense has been pretty decent this year. So I like the under 47 in this game. It's ticked down to 46.5 at some places, but I think this is a stone cold, pardon the pun, under with some bad weather there in Fort Collins.
Adam, if there was no weather in this game, would you like Colorado State catching 14?
Yeah, I think if weather wasn't a factor, I'd be interested in Colorado State because they are pretty effective at throwing the ball. The only problem is that Fowler Nicolosi, I think he's thrown 11 or 12 picks this season. And if you squander any possessions against the Service Academy, it puts you behind the eight ball. So that would be the risk reward for me. But I think if there was no weather, I would be interested in Colorado State because I think they're a pretty decent team that just has been marred by inconsistency this season.
All right, let's switch over to baseball. Obviously, you do more work on baseball than anybody at the network. You write a daily column with your plays. And we've reached the point of the World Series. Before we get into your bet tonight, your bet for the series, any props you have, I want to ask, to me, there seems to be this overreaction of baseball's got to change its playoff format. This is unacceptable, a 5 versus a 6. We got to tear it all down. It's not right. The teams don't have enough advantage that win their divisions. I say baseball's always a sport about who's hot and who the pitcher is. And if you enjoy the game, enjoy the World Series and stop complaining.
Yeah, baseball's just a high variance sport, especially in small sample sizes. I mean, you'll see many instances throughout the course of the season where a really, really bad team, a bottom feeder, sweeps a really good team in a 3-game series. It just happens. And you're definitely going to see that in the playoffs because, as you mentioned, you know, I mean, you've got teams that, you know, are going to play well in short bursts, teams that aren't. A lot of it comes down to hitting with runners in scoring position in those smaller sample sizes. And that's what's carried Texas here throughout the postseason. They're the best offense in the playoffs in terms of batting with runners in scoring position. Arizona actually has not been, but much like their other previous series, they're facing a team where they're the inferior offensive team, and they've been able to overcome that throughout the course of the postseason here. Yeah, you know what? The network execs are not thrilled with this series. I don't think the casual observer will be watching, but baseball is, you know, it's not the NBA. It's not where the chalk holds up almost all the time. So this season's been extreme in terms of underdogs. But hey, this is what we've got. And credit to these two teams, these two coaching staffs and front offices. 2 years ago, these two teams combined for 212 losses. And now here they are in the World Series.
Yeah, maybe it's not the sexiest matchup on paper, but there's a lot of fun young players in this game. I mean, Corbin Carroll from my old neck of the woods in Seattle, he's tremendous. Josh Young on the other side, Evan Carter's now blossomed into this superstar player. Like, it's a really fun series. In terms of who you like in this series and the betting odds, at DraftKings, Texas minus 170 on the series price, Diamondbacks plus 145. Any play for you there on series price before we get to your game one look?
Nothing on the series price because I've been a 3-time Diamondbacks doubter already. I had -1.5 with Milwaukee in the wild card round. I bet against them. I took the Dodgers big price. I took the Phillies big price. I don't have the heart to do it again. I can't doubt this team again, especially because they've evolved and they've really, you know, adapted in the playoffs here, specifically a guy like Brandon Pfaadt, who was not good in his game one wild card start. His other three starts have been excellent. So, you know, the Diamondbacks have really evolved as the postseason's gone along, and it's past time that I respect that.
I want to throw out a couple of long shots for World Series MVP, and I'm going to look at the Diamondbacks side of it. And you just mentioned Brandon Pfaadt. I mean, the team is a whole different team with Pfaadt as a three-starter the way he's thrown the ball the last three starts. So I would look at Pfaadt if he could win two games in this series, which is not inconceivable because it's, you know, there's no big names on the offensive side of the ball for Arizona. And here's another one at a really long price is Ginkle. Ginkle could have a role in 4 or 5 games here. I mean, let's face it, the Phillies' best hitters couldn't hit him. And that was a big part of why they couldn't win these games late. The Arizona Diamondback bullpen was better than Philadelphia, which I never thought would have happened.
So the problem with Pfaadt is he's going to pitch game 3 and then game 7. So does this go to a 7th game where he's able to pitch twice? That would be the concern there. Look, I mean, I think in game 3 going up against Max Scherzer, who is clearly compromised, you know, Pfaadt definitely has a good shot, especially being able to pitch at home. He won't have to be in a hostile road environment, although that didn't really matter to him in the last series. So that would be the concern, is that you need a long series for Pfaadt to pitch twice. Now, I guess he could theoretically be available in relief in a game 6, you know, game 5, something like that, if they need him. But for him to pitch twice in this series, you're asking for game 7. And if he wanted on the road, then certainly he'd get some consideration.
Yeah, Pfaadt right now 65-1 over at DraftKings to be World Series MVP. Real quick, Adam, who do you like for game 1 here? What's the play?
The play for me is the first 5 over 4.5. I think Zach Gallen has been really bad in the playoffs. I kind of expected this coming into the postseason. He did not have a good second half in terms of some of his underlying metrics. And now the fastball looks flat, gave up 5 homers across 2 starts. against the Phillies on his last two outings. And Eovaldi is just kind of pitching over his skis a little bit. So I like first five over 4.5 tonight. As far as a side, lean Rangers, but I've doubted the Diamondbacks enough.
All right, maybe we'll get some early fireworks over there in Big D down in Arlington. He is Adam Berg, VSiN Managing Editor. Make sure you check out VSiN Daily Baseball Bets, also the VSiN College Ball Betting Podcast, and all his work at VSiN.com. Thanks for all the stuff, Adam.
Thank you.
Have a good one, guys.
All right. Hour number two is coming up next. We go back to the gridiron.